Next, the kids are all right.
A lot of steamy action in that movie. Annette Bening on Julianne Moore and Julianne Moore on Mark Ruffalo.
Wait, she wasn't on Curl and Firth?
No.
Then who's on Firth?
Naomi Watts.
Watts on Firth?
No.
Then who's on Firth?
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
And scene.
Welcome to The Geek Generation, episode 27. I am joined again by the ever-aging Captain Reliable. How are you, Brian Lipsitz?
Good. I'm officially 30 now. Yay.
You are, and that was the first thing I was going to mention. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, sir.
And not only you, but Sir Todd Tiuli, another co-host, shares the same birthday?
I'm like looking at the birthdays, I'm like, holy crap. So I messaged him on Facebook on his wall, and I'm like, dude, I didn't know we shared the same birthday. I'm like, awesome. He's like, and so we call each other birthday brothers, so it's kind of funny.
Very cool. Well, then I'm just going to say www.hectorandtodd.com to go there. See Todd and Hector's stuff and listen to Dangerous Memories. That's his birthday plug. As if I don't play the commercial enough, but that is his birthday plug. Aside from that, I mentioned last week that I went to go see The Chronicles of Narnia, Voyage of the Dawn Treader, and I think my expectations were right on par because it was not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know a movie's not good when you're constantly aware of how uncomfortable you are and you're readjusting the way you're sitting all the time. You're like, oh, when is this thing going to end?
Did you check your watch like five times? Or
yeah, it wasn't good. And the religious connotations were even amped up.
Yeah.
In this one than the other ones. Like at one point in the movie, Aslan literally says, "In your world, I'm known by another name."
Fantastic.
And it's like, come on, really? We're going there? It was weird, but I did not enjoy it. But how was your birthday, by the way?
It was good. It was good. It's pretty low key. I got some cool stuff, including something from you, sir, which was pretty awesome. I wasn't expecting it, so I got a cool hardcover art of Jim Lee, which was the coolest thing I'd ever seen, because I had seen it in Borders like months ago, and I'd never picked it up, but it was pretty awesome. So
glad you enjoyed that.
But no, it was a good birthday. Good stuff. I did nothing really like major. You know, had cake with my parents, went out and stuff, so it wasn't a big celebration, but it was good, low key.
Hey, as long as it was a good time, that's really all that matters.
Yeah.
Awesome. We have some Super Bowl spots to talk about today.
Yes.
Lots of things coming out of the Super Bowl. Did you watch the game?
I did. Not for the game. I'm not a big sports fan. So, I mean, I was like, oh, trailers, Thor trailer, Captain America trailer. So, I watched it for that stuff. But, yeah, I did watch the game.
Yeah, I watched all the trailers, like, the day after or when I got home, whenever it was. I don't even remember. But there were some high points and some low points, I think, for a lot of people. I think the high point being the Captain America trailer.
I 100% agree. I do want to interject, though, that I think the biggest mistake I've seen in a long time was the lack of a Green Lantern trailer by DC and Warner Brothers. I really feel that, you know, if they didn't even put anything out there, and that's coming out, you know, even before Captain America, and they're just, like, not even... It's like, I don't know if they're either they didn't want to pay the money or they're that scared that it's going to not do well, because that's not a good sign when you don't, a major launch like that is not even featured in the Super Bowl. So I just thought that was weird.
You're right. That's an epic fail on DC's part.
Yeah. And like, they that's their big thing they have this year and nothing. So
yeah.
I was kind of surprised, but.
Should have definitely had a presence when so many other like major blockbuster movies are going to. It's almost like DC doesn't have faith in it.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, this is not a good. It's not a good sign for it if it's like, I don't know. So
yeah, the Captain America trailer I think did a lot of things right For one, we saw a lot of like new stuff, even if they were quick shots. The CGI for a more scrawny Chris Evans looks great. Red Skull looks amazing.
Looked awesome. That was my favorite part. And the shield, and it blew me away. I think it was because the Thor one was so quick, and we had already seen a pretty lengthy Thor one that was a lot more online that had already, you know, shown a lot, so it wasn't like anything really new. Mm-hmm. Where the Captain America one, we hadn't seen much except still photos, so this was like your first, you know, glimpse at everything in action, I think. So
yeah, and seeing the costume in action made me feel a lot better about it.
Yeah, yeah, I can't go over how good that trailer was. Like, I thought it was really well, and it was short trailer, but I thought it did very well in the short time it had. So
absolutely, and the Red Skull trailer, the Red Skull shot is really quick. But for those of you who want to see a closer look at it, I did post a screenshot in the Captain America Super Bowl spot article. So check it out.
I actually had to freeze frame it when I first watched the trailer online. I'm like, holy crap, because like it went by so fast in the commercial that you like barely you catch a glimpse of it.
And yeah, and that is picture perfect from the comics. Yeah. Like the whole way his head looks and stuff. Awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
There's also two, since that's come out, there's a Team America spoof already of the Captain America trailer where they take the America Fuck Yeah song and replace the music in the trailer with that, and it is amazingly done. Did you see that at all?
Yes, I did.
Oh, so good.
It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I love that. The Thor trailer, like we said, a lot of people are kind of down on this one. But I don't think it's that anything is necessarily wrong with it. It's just we got nothing new when all the other spots were giving us something more.
I think this was just sort of like, you know, for the general public to show them a quick thing. Where the other one online was like 2 minutes long, mm-hmm. and, you know, they had a lot of time to. This obviously was a short spot, so they just showed like very quick things. And, you know, like you said, there was nothing new, but I mean, it wasn't. I didn't think it was a bad trailer. It was just nothing that we had seen differently. So, I mean, it really wasn't for us. It was for the general public, I think, to, you know, say, oh, that movie's coming out kind of thing.
Right. The only thing that I guess you could argue would be new is the beast they show at the end of it really quickly.
Yes. The Asgardian, whatever the hell it is. I don't know what it is. Giant beast.
Yeah, but aside from that, it's a little bit of the same old, so nothing special there.
No.
Cowboys and Aliens.
I was impressed.
I was impressed too.
I had heard about the movie, and I knew Jon Favreau was directing. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I hadn't really read much about it, but I saw the trailer, and I'm like, okay, this has got a great cast, and this looks pretty crazy, so I'm on board.
Yeah, while the initial trailer felt a little cheesier, this one made it seem to work a lot better together. It came off a lot more believable.
And I just have to say that I was over my friends, and there was about like 15 people there, and a lot of people had no idea what this movie was, but after they saw the trailer, they're like, oh my god, James Bond, Harrison Ford, and like Aliens and Cowboys, this sounds all like they were really excited about it, which shows you that like the general public who had no idea it was coming out, it did a good job, I think, in getting people ready for it.
Yeah, so. And those were very conscious casts because Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford, they're more serious action stars. They're not comedy stars necessarily, so that was a very strategic decision. And in the trailer, naked Olivia Wilde for the win. Real quick.
I agree, sir.
Some people think it looks out of place, and Favreau has already commented on the trailer saying that it has, when you see it in the movie, it's not something they did just for the sake of getting Olivia Wilde naked, but some people are already speculating that she's an alien.
Could be.
I mean, I'm not going to say one way or the other because I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything because, again, I don't know. But there's speculation that she's an alien. I mean, in the longer trailer, she goes up to Daniel Craig and is like, oh, you don't remember anything. Clearly, she knows him. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine another scenario where she would be walking into a campfire naked.
Hey, you never know. No, but yeah, I hear you.
And lastly, the Super 8 trailer. Now, this one had a lot of new stuff because really before this, all we had seen was the train crashing and being punched at the door.
Yeah, there was absolutely pretty much you knew like nothing. And I mean, still, you don't know much, but they gave you a little more.
Yeah, and beyond the trailer, there's actually some information from J.J. Abrams that I'll read real quick here. It says, J.J. Abrams has revealed to the L.A. Times a number of details about the film, including the confirmation of the long-rumored plot, which will feature six children who, in 1979, are trying to make their own zombie movie shot on Super 8 film, hence the name. One night, they happen to capture on film a violent train accident that sets loose an otherworldly beast. Abrams confirms that Super 8 started as two completely separate ideas, a coming-of-age drama and a monster movie, but that the combination of the two really fueled his inspiration. That's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Like, I honestly, like, I love going in blind sometimes, especially with his movies, like Cloverfield. I knew, I don't think a lot of people knew, like, that one they tried to keep really, you know, right, under wraps until it came out, and I knew a little more than I should have, but I still thoroughly enjoyed it, so I was, like, you know, not knowing a lot with his movies. I mean, Star Trek was different, because that was, like, a...
Well, yeah, that's,
you know,
Star Trek.
Yeah, that's Star Trek, but you know what I mean, his other movies are, you know, so...
Yeah, J.J. Abrams loves mystery, obviously, yeah. I mean, Lost, yeah, and Cloverfield, and... all that stuff. And Super 8 was definitely in that same direction the way it was unveiled. And I don't know. It's, I don't need to see anymore. Like, I was,
yeah,
I wasn't necessarily sold on the initial teaser, but after this one, it was enough for me. Now I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I think the problem with a lot of movies nowadays, is that they give away way too much in the trailers nowadays.
Absolutely.
Like, so I can't count how many times I go to the movie theater and you pretty much see like an entire, you can pretty much figure out the entire plot of a movie by the trailer. Like they show you way too much. Mm-hmm. So I agree.
Well then, with those out of the way, what are you geeking out over this week?
Yay!
Oh my, this probably would be the biggest geek out in the history of geek outs.
I guess what? No, I already know what it is.
I think you know.
Go for it.
I'll go more in detail later, but I've never had such a mix of emotions from going to like depression to 24 hours later, like jumping out of my chair and wanting to like, I don't know, jump as high as I could. Michael Rosenbaum coming back to Smallville for the 2-hour series finale is the greatest news in the history of mankind.
Yeah, that is awesome. I'm very, very excited for that myself.
Other than that, I'm also quite excited about Marvel vs. Capcom 3 coming out this week.
Yes, I have it pre-ordered. I'm very pumped.
Me too. So I'm excited. That should be good. There's one other thing, and now I'm losing my train of thought. What was the third thing? I had it written down, and now I don't remember, so I suck.
I gotta say, even though I'm geeking out about Marvel vs. Capcom 3 mm-hmm. coming out, I'm gonna miss reporting on it pretty much every week.
I was just gonna say, because it's gonna be like, wait, there's no more, like, every yeah, it's so much information, like, consistently coming out about it that...
Right,
yeah.
We have one story later on regarding it, but after that, it's gonna be pretty dry for a while, unless we're gonna report on, like, DLC characters
that's,
and stuff.
That's what I was gonna say, yeah, that's probably about the next thing.
I might
yeah.
have to just geek out on it on a weekly basis, just to keep it in the in the forefront. It's been such a part of the show, I'm gonna miss it. So no other geek outs?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think the third one was the Captain America Super Bowl thing, so we already covered that.
Oh, okay.
So.
I have a pretty hefty list actually this week.
All right, go
bunch
for
of
it.
Geek outs. It's been exciting lately. I don't know why, it just has been. First of which was not last night, but the week prior. Dana Carvey returned to host Saturday Night Live.
Oh, good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
And I haven't been watching Saturday Night Live like religiously, but I had to watch Dana Carvey and see what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Wayne's World right out the gate and Mike Myers back to do that with him was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and I can't get over how like good they both looked. Like they didn't look like they aged that badly at all. Like it looked really good. I was like, you know, you're always worried that like they're going to get fat and old.
Right.
And I had seen Dana Carvey, but I mean, even Mike Myers, I mean, they both looked really good for, you know, how much time has passed since the last time they've done one.
Yeah. And a lot of the times when they go back to those old characters, it comes off as really contrived and they just can't recapture mm-hmm. the magic. But that was not the issue with Wayne's World.
No,
it
no,
was
fantastic.
So good. It was great to see those characters in our modern time commenting on the things in the way that they do, and all it felt so like going home.
Yeah, I agree, because like that was like such a big part of, you know, SNL when I was growing up. It's like Wayne's World was in the movies, and you know,
yeah,
that yeah,
and it wasn't even just Wayne's World, because we also saw Church Lady,
yeah,
which was Church Chat well. Was so fantastic, bringing on, like, I'm not a Justin Bieber fan, but mm-hmm. that was hilarious.
And the Kardashians, the fake Kardashians. Yeah,
Snooki and good. Oh,
yeah,
Snooki. So good. Those are both on the site for people that want to watch. I have the links right to the Hulu clips. They're so,
nice.
So funny. But it's also funny, too, because you watch those, and they're so good. It's not just the nostalgia. Those were good skits. If you listen to the audience's reaction from those skits compared to the others, they're funnier.
Yeah, it's. I was telling my friend, actually, like, for the first time, I DVR the show, and I pretty much fast forward through half the skits because they're not. This one, I actually watched every single segment, and I thought pretty much on a whole, the show was pretty damn funny for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And I know it was just, you know, coincidentally, Dana Carvey hosted, but no, it just seemed like everything was hitting on all cylinders this week or that week. So.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not even just the writing, and you gotta imagine that Dana Carvey had a hand in writing a lot of these skits. But it just emphasized how good SNL used to be, and it's not just a result of the writing. The cast, and you could see and tell when Dana Carvey was improvising things that were off script, because he is just that kind of talent. Like the chair falling down in the church chat thing, he made it into a joke. They don't all have that ability.
No.
But he's just so good. So good.
Yeah.
The next thing I'm geeking out about this week is that Howard Stern, I mentioned last week that he joined Twitter.
Yes.
And it's been roughly a week, and he has already found a way to revolutionize Twitter. I don't know if you are familiar with what he did the other day.
No, I follow him, but I haven't been checking my Twitter regularly, so I probably missed it. What did he do?
Oh, there was a huge chunk. He was tweeting like crazy because apparently yesterday afternoon, Private Parts was on HBO in New York, and he decided to sit down and watch it and provide commentary via Twitter throughout the whole movie.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so he said before he would love to do a re-release of Private Parts, but he doesn't have – it's not his sole decision. He needs the studio on board and everything. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't really been able to release a version that has recorded commentary from people on the show and stuff, which would be fantastic. So he decided – it was on, I think it wasn't even from the beginning, but he jumped in as it was playing and just started providing commentary, and people were freaking out. There's articles about it all over the internet. And this guy, he's an innovator. He's always been known as an innovator. Less than a week on Twitter, and he already found a way to make it better.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with Private Parts, like, not to deviate, but I mean, that movie, like, it was never real. It came out on DVD, and it was like a bare bones. I don't even know if it might have been a straight VHS rip, but it was just like bare bones, nothing, no special features, pretty much. And I always wondered why they never, you know, did a special edition or, you know, anything. They never re-released it. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. I always wondered that.
Yeah, and they need to. They really need to, because the audience demand is there, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was just that was so cool. I wasn't even watching it because I don't have HBO, but I was still following along, and I was bummed because I was going out to the movies that night, and I couldn't break plans, obviously, to sit and watch a Twitter stream, but I was very entertained by just watching him. I knew all the scenes because I have the movie, and I've watched it 100 times, and it was so cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. The last thing I'm geeking out about is something I'm not sure if you saw online at all, but I actually just bumped into it today. There's a video up on YouTube right now about a group of people. I guess it's the result of a month-long program at the University of Amsterdam with support from ISLA, which is the Intelligent Systems Lab Amsterdam. And these people use the Xbox Kinect along with a pair of VR glasses, and they created an immersive Superman experience.
Really? No, I've not seen or heard about this.
Oh, yeah, it's really cool. The graphics are bare bones. They're very whatever. The physics are okay, but it's really the concept. And this is really, I think, what the Kinect is good for. Like, I like the PS3 Move. I like having a controller in my hand. Same with the Wii. But when you're playing something like a Superman thing, I don't want to hold a controller because he wouldn't. Yeah. But if I'm playing like something with a lightsaber, I'd want to have that in my hand and pretend I'm holding the hilt type thing. Mm-hmm. But it was really cool because you wear the VR glasses, you have the Kinect, you put one arm forward, and that allows you to fly in whatever direction you point in, which is really cool. If you put two arms forward, it triples your flight speed, so you can start flying and then throw the other one forward and you take off faster. If you touch one side of the glasses, it activates your heat vision, so you can blast things around. Touching the other side activates your ice breath. So it's really cool. Like I said, the graphics, you don't get your expectations too high as for what they're doing in the video. It's really a concept demonstration. They've only been working on it for a month, but it's an awesome idea, and it's great that the VR glasses make it truly immersive. So while you're flying in one direction, you could turn your head and look sideways, and your head would turn on Superman, and it's all from a first-person perspective. So you really just see the two arms in front of you, and you can look around. It's really cool looking, and that's going to be that'll be in the show notes for those who want to go and watch that after.
Nice, yeah. Nice.
But that was the last thing I was geeking out about, just because I thought that was really cool and a good use of the technology.
Sweet.
Freakouts this week. What are you freaking out about?
Oh, freakout!
Oh, this is going to get a lot of hate now. So I did watch the Super Bowl, and so after the Super Bowl, no one changed the channel, and, you know, people were over still. So Glee was on afterwards, and I have never to this day seen an episode of Glee. Yeah. And so this was my first experience in watching Glee, and I really, you know, I gave it the benefit of the doubt, and I'm like, all right, let's see what this shit is. But I already had a preconceived notion that I was going to hate it, so, you know.
What is Glee? I mean.
I don't get it. I don't get it. It was painful. It was the most painful hour of my life, I think, and it was just, I don't get it at all. And I don't know who, I guess, I don't know who the audience of it was supposed to be. It's just, it was bad. So I just want to get that out there that, yeah, I tried Glee, and it still sucks.
Yeah, so. I don't understand the choice, and Fox lost, it is Fox, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Fox lost so many viewers by having Glee on after the Super Bowl. The numbers, it's like, if you could chart it out, it's a huge drop. They went from the most watched program in television history, whether people know that or not, the Super Bowl this year was the most watched program of all time, and they put on Glee and cut the numbers by at least three quarters. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's like, why would they even think, like, the same audience would be like, you know, that's like, yeah, I'm sure a bunch of football-watching people are going to want to watch a musical Glee show afterwards. Like, I don't even get it. I guess because it's their big show, they want it, but it's like, seriously? And yes, there was some Super Bowl connection in the episode, but I mean, seriously? Really?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't get it.
I can't imagine what Super Bowl fan, a drunk, mind you, most likely, is sitting there like, oh, that kid singing Madonna. I love that. Oh, it's touching my heartstrings. I'm going to watch Glee every week now.
Yeah.
I don't know why I got Southern with that, but.
That's all right.
Yeah, I don't understand that decision. It's foolish.
Yeah, I don't. It was just weird, and I'm like, okay, that was my one shot on it. You've had your chance to impress me, and you failed. So,
yeah.
That's just terrible.
Fail on Fox's part.
Yeah. The only other freakout I had was the lack of Green Lantern trailer, but we already covered that too. So
yeah, another fail by Warner
Brothers.
Another
big epic fail by Warner Brothers.
Big, big, big. I'm just hoping the movie's not going to be a fail.
I don't know. The closer it gets, I mean, I haven't seen anything more than that one trailer, and the fact that they haven't shown any new footage or anything, and I don't know. I just am getting more and more worried as time goes on, which sucks because I love Green Lantern and I want it to be successful, but doesn't look too good.
I've seen some images of the toy line, which is interesting.
Yes.
And
yes, I did see
those.
One
of the things that I actually like is that I definitely saw a figure of Green Lantern where the green areas and the black areas were very well defined. So it looked a little more like the classic costume. It still had that organic look, but there was a clear definition to show a little more of the classic costume.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing Warner DC even announced this week was, wow, they're going to do a bunch of prequel comics like right before the movie. And I'm like, that's not going to help the general audience, you know, getting into the movie. It's like, that's not new. It's like, that was their big thing they announced this week. And I'm like, fantastic, but that's not going to help the movie.
Yeah, if anything, the smarter thing would be to take something from the movie into the comics afterward.
Yeah,
because they want to get people reading the comics. I don't think they're too worried about the movie, you know?
No. So, I don't know. Epic fail.
Yeah. My freak out, and I feel like a friggin' Alzheimer's patient when I say this, because you would think from the week before I would remember that I didn't enjoy the last episode of No Ordinary Family, and yet I watch it the next week. Like, oh, this is a show about people with powers. I'm going to watch this like I never watched it before. My big problem with the show right now is that the father of the family, his name is Jim. He freaks out basically every episode that someone's going to see him using his powers and know his identity, yet he has made absolutely no effort to cover his face. I don't know if the show is purposely trying to avoid like alter egos and stuff like that, but he's the only one that really fights crime as like a side thing. The others have their powers and they use them throughout the day, but he's the only one that's made like an active effort to fight crime and yet has done nothing. I think at one point he had like a hoodie on. Aside from that, and he's not even doing that anymore. Aside from that, he's this big, like fairly stocky, bald dude that's incredibly easy to pick out of a crowd. Why are you not doing something if you're that worried about people knowing who you are? It takes 2 seconds to throw even like a ski mask on.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems that's my biggest problem with the show is it just makes me feel like an idiot.
Do we even know if like how it's doing ratings wise? Because I haven't been following. I'm wondering if it's even going to make it past the first season. Like I haven't been watching. I'm assuming it's doing fairly well because they haven't like, you know, usually with shows like that, if they don't do well, they pretty much cut them off their feet and pretty much cut off the knees. And you know, either cut down the episodes or cancel it outright. So
I think it's
must be doing fairly well.
I think it's just like average. It's not stellar. It's not in the toilet. It's just kind of in that mid range.
But they had that, I forget which is it on ABC?
It is.
Yeah, they have no programming anyway, so they're probably looking for anything to actually, so that makes sense.
Right, and I understand the desire to make something the whole family can watch that involves powers because it is the mainstream thing right now, but I can't imagine kids are enjoying this that much either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it says about me. I didn't even give it a chance. I like saw the first episode, and I was just like, okay. Actually, I liked it better than The Cape, but that doesn't say much.
Right, right. And I really like Julie Benn. She was awesome on Dexter, but her character is so annoying for some reason in this.
She's such a great actress. She did phenomenal in Buffy and Angel. I don't understand why she's in this show.
Yeah, and I don't like her character. She's really bitchy. That's what it is, I think. Very naggy and ugh.
Yeah,
don't like it. That's my only freak out though. Fortunately, I had a lot more positive this week than negative, which is a rare case.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it doesn't happen too often. Let's take a look at the listener emails. Last week we asked, who do you want to see as Lois Lane in The Man of Steel? I wasn't expecting a whole lot. We didn't get a whole lot, but we did have some interesting answers. Do you want to give an answer before we go into it?
I'm torn. I had an answer. Now I just go in the list of emails first so I can try to remember
what my actual answer
was. Yeah.
So the first one comes in from, there's no name specified. It just said AOL for the name, like when it came into my email box. So apparently I got an email from all of AOL.
That was their consensus.
Yeah. AOL's consensus is that Lois Lane equals Rachel McAdams.
I could see that.
I think that's an okay choice. I would be all right with that.
The sad part is, this is going to sound terrible, but I think at this point, with Kate Bosworth being the last one on screen, I think anyone would be better than her. But the problem is, I've been spoiled for so long with Erica Durance that I'm kind of like worried that like they're not going to be able to hold a candle to her.
Right.
She's so good on Smallville. Like, she's become my favorite Lois Lane of all time.
Yep.
So it's just kind of, but interesting. I could see Rachel McAdams. That wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, I can see that. Anna Zifkak writes in, I was pretty stumped on this one. Henry Cavill is only 28 years old, so I had trouble thinking of anybody young enough to play opposite. So my random pick is Ashley Green. She was actually a pretty good actress, and given the terrible dialogue in Twilight, that is saying something. She's really, really pretty, and I think she looks the part. What do you think about that?
Vito, anyone in Chernobyl? Anyone in Twilight does not belong. Now, I don't know her, so she may be. I don't know. I can't give a consensus. I don't know. I've heard the name, and I've probably seen a picture, but I don't know her acting ability.
Yep.
Although her being in Twilight doesn't make me be like, yeah, that sounds like a perfect fit.
Yeah, I only saw the first Twilight movie, so, and that's really the majority of stuff that she's done. However, those of you that remember the top 10 Hollywood Hotties episode, she was my number one on the list.
Oh, was she? Okay.
She was.
All right. Maybe that's where I saw her.
Yeah. So when Anna says really, really pretty, that's lowballing it. She is freaking gorgeous. All right. But I think she might be too hot for Lois Lane. And I know that sounds maybe odd. I always picture Lois Lane as more of a, like not supermodel hot. Because Ashley Green is like supermodel hot. It's almost too much.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want to, I know what you mean. You don't want to cast her like a, yeah, exactly. I agree.
She should be a little more girl next door with like an edge.
Yeah, more plain. Yeah. A little more plain, yeah.
And granted, all the people that I have as picks, you would never consider plain, but it is Hollywood after all. Plain for Hollywood standards. How about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. The last one comes in from @TheVicFaria on Twitter. And he says, who should be Lois Lane? My answer, Eliza Dushku.
See, as much as I like Eliza, and you know, she's got a special place in my heart. From you know, she's from Watertown, and you know, my friend actually, you know, met her because her niece still goes to the high school he teaches at, and she's in Buffy and Angel, and she's been in Dollhouse. I just don't think she has the acting chops to pull it off in this. I don't think she does because she struggled in Dollhouse, where I don't, in Dollhouse the premise was that each episode she had to play a different person,
which is a challenge.
It's a challenge, and she didn't even. Kinda, she did okay certain times, but other times I just don't know if she could pull it off. And plus, I don't even think look wise she's the right choice. I think she's gorgeous, but I don't think she's the right choice for Lois Lane. Mm. And that hurts me to say it, but it's true.
Yeah, wait, no, that's honesty, man. That's honesty.
Yeah, I just don't. I couldn't see it. Hers like the Black Cat in Spider-Man or something. I could see, but not as you know, not as Lois Lane. She's too. She plays too much of like the slutty like. Those kind of characters. She's not Lois Lane.
The seductress and
yes, exactly. She's not Lois Lane. It's too.
Before I give my choices, which I know the readers are readers and listeners are eagerly
and readers.
Yes, they're reading my words as they come through the air. I know they're anxiously awaiting my choice, but I want to do a little brief history of the Lois Lanes that we've seen in media.
Sounds like a
starting off with Margot Kidder.
Well, if you want to, I was going to say, if you want to even go farther back, Noelle Neal. All right. Go ahead, Margot Kidder.
I think to make a successful Lois Lane in any form of Superman thing, you need to have a certain level of sex appeal, but you also need to look like you can kick some ass. And you can't, you have to be like good looking, but not be too girly girly.
It's interesting though, because Margot Kidder to me was never attractive at all, and she even as a kid I was like she's kind of like not manly, but she was kind of like rough around the edges. But I think that's a good. That was the good part of her as Lois Lane. I mean, I wasn't. She had great chemistry with Chris Reeve, which was the most important part. But visually, I don't think she was a great Lois Lane. But I think she did a good job in the character as the character herself. But I think she's a little too rough around the edges. And as obviously as the movies went on, you know, she got older, and by like the fourth movie, it was like, okay, that's not Lois Lane. She looks like an older lady. She looks like a really haggard Lois Lane. So, I mean, I feel bad. I mean, but you know what I mean? So,
yeah, she was more of the gruffer tomboyish Lois Lane.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, but I mean, you know, she was the first movie once. I mean, in the 70s, she, you know, I gotta give her credit. She, you know, she took it and ran with it and made it her own. So.
Right. And then as you move into the Adventures of Lois and Clark, you start
Terry
to you get the Terry Hatcher, which is a little more the other direction, a little more girly girl.
And I remember watching that when I think it was on, what was it, 94. I was like 13. I thought she was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she did a really, really good job, I think. Although at times it wasn't her fault, but the show wasn't very well written, and other times it got really, really hokey and weird. And they, you know, having them get married and wanting to have a baby.
The amnesia angle.
Oh God! And the eating the frogs. And don't trust me, people who haven't seen it. Yes, there was an actual arc of the show where she was going to get married to Clark, and it turned out it was a clone that Lex Luthor made, and all she did was eat frogs. And I swear to God, this was actually aired on ABC. And it went on for like 8 episodes or 9 episodes. Yeah, because the whole thing was they wanted to delay the wedding until the next season, and that was a stupid idea. But yeah, I mean, up until when they got together on the show, I thought she was a great Lois Lane, but once they got into the romantic relationship, I kind of lost. She kind of just went into generic romance type thing, and I didn't really like it. Where I think Erica Durance can really do the romance and keep still being Lois Lane at the same time.
Yeah, Erica Durance is almost like the middle ground between the Margot Kidder and the Terry Hatcher. She's still hot, she can still be a girl, and yet she can throw down.
It's funny though, because when she first appeared on Smallville way back, was it season 4, episode 1? Everyone thought, like, oh my God, this girl's been one movie. She was in that terrible House of the Dead movie. And you know, she looks horrible. She doesn't look like Lois Lane. And, you know, now people are like, she's the greatest Lois Lane of all. It's just funny how over the time she has completely turned everyone's, like, and I was skeptical at first too, but she has that, like, sassy, like, I can't describe it. She just is really, really, really good at playing Lois
Lane. Yeah, you gotta have that edge. You have to. Yeah. And that's, she has it.
Yeah, and for not being a well-known actress who had been, she did a, and she, I give her 100,000% credit for the job she's done. So I don't know. It's gonna be hard. And then let's go to Kate Bosworth, yeah. who I thought was absolutely terrible. And it's not her fault per se. Or actually, it is her fault. But she just was just so bland, and I didn't feel any chemistry. And she just was like, really, you're Lois Lane? You look like a flight attendant from some... Like, she was just like, I don't know. I can't even... And it was weird because Scott and I, when we saw the movie, we both loved the movie, and we were like, oh, it was phenomenal. And then over his time, we're both like, we see the flaws, and I'm like, yeah, that's the biggest flaw of the movie was Kate Bosworth, I think.
Yeah, I would criticize for liking it on the first round, but I didn't 100% hate Batman and Robin the first time I watched it either. So.
No, I think it was just we saw it, we were so excited, we heard the John Williams music, and we were just like taken away. And then, yeah, like months later, I'm rewatching it, and I'm just like, all right, this movie, you know, doesn't hold up. But what can you do? I mean, it had its good points. There was some good stuff in it, but a lot of misfires, and especially Kate Bosworth was one of the main ones, I thought, in the whole kid angle, and Lex Luthor acting like he was in 1970s, Gene Hackman, mm-hmm. Lex Luthor.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it failed on many, many levels. And like you said, the Kate Bosworth, it was basically the same thing, the same problem as Brandon Routh. Neither of them had a presence. They were just really flat, two-dimensional characters.
Very flat, yeah, very cardboardish. And, you know, I do want to mention, though, Lois Lane, who voiced in Superman the Animated Series,
yes.
Dana Delaney, she did a phenomenal job just voice wise. Who I thought she did, and it carried on to Justice League, and you know, very, very well done, I thought.
And if she were younger, she even has the look of being a Lois Lane.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just she did a perfect job, I thought, voice wise. Yeah,
totally. So. Well, then, with all those things said, is there an actress you have in mind?
I really can't think of anyone. It's such a tough. I can't think of any. I know I should have. I can't think of anyone. It's a really tough choice for me. Like, I can't visualize anyone right now as like, it's tough because I think my problem is if Smallville's still on, it's hard for me to get by that Lois Lane and thinking of someone who's going to be Lois Lane in the movies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I just can't. I can't think of anyone.
All right. Well, I've done a decent amount of research on this. I looked at a lot of the internet picks as who they want to play. I went in my own personal mental catalog and saw if I could pick out any from there. I have three choices that I would be really happy with, and one of those a definitive choice for me, who I put my vote behind. So okay. the two that I would be really happy with are Rachel McAdams. I can get behind that. I think she would be really good. She's got, in Sherlock Holmes, it was almost that same type of character.
Yes.
Where she was kind of flirty and yet still had like an edge to her. So I could see her doing that. Mm-hmm. The next one would be Rebecca Hall, who is not as big a name. But for those of you unfamiliar, she played Ben Affleck's girlfriend in The Town.
Okay.
So I think she has that look, although it's, again, I think borrowing. I believe she's British, too. So just have another.
They're gonna have it's an all British cat.
I know,
it's an all
I know.
Cat now.
But
hey,
I think she could pull it off. She's around the right age. She's got the look. She's got enough of an edge to her. I felt in the town at least.
Yeah.
But my definitive choice as to who I want to see for Lois Lane is Michelle Monaghan.
I could see that actually. That's a. Wasn't expecting that, but I think about it. That I could see it. I can see
and for
it.
Those of you who don't know who she is, because she's not a huge name yet, she will be bigger, I guarantee it, especially if she is Lois Lane. She was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. She was in Due Date playing Robert Downey Jr.'s wife. She was in a movie called Trucker, which I don't think a ton of people saw.
I didn't know that existed.
But she's absolutely got the look. She's actually very Erica Durant's looking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you saw Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you can see her translating over to Lois Lane very easily.
Interesting. Okay, my choice is Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, how about that weird rumor?
That's what I was going to bring up. So, did anyone else read that article where she was testing for one of the roles in the movie? And I wanted to break my computer screen, and I was like, if this happens, I almost will boycott this movie because that is the most insane. Not to say that she's going to play Lois Lane, but she was testing for the other female role, which we don't know yet, but it pretty much have figured out, I think.
Yeah, there's no way she's going to be a major role in the Superman movie. She's just way too big of a risk, and Superman has had enough stumbles recently.
Yeah, they can't take that risk. I just hope they can't.
No.
Go back to jail or rehab, wherever she came from.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So that was my that's my pick. Now she'd make a fabulous. Actually, I guarantee, like 10 years ago, people would have thought she would have been an okay Lois Lane. Like I don't know, just because when she was like the it girl for that time.
And I still defend the fact that she can act.
Oh, she can when she's not a complete train wreck, out of control, drug, alcoholic, whatever, klepto, whatever the hell she is now.
Yeah.
So. I mean, talk about a fall from grace. But yeah, I mean, she can't act.
Way too risky, though. She's not out of the woods yet. She's not in RDJ territory where it's okay.
No, not at all.
No. All right. No. Well, I think it's a good time to take a quick break, and we will be back with the news.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris, your host for Geek Tech Live, the biweekly podcast that showcases tech news, reviews of consumer products and games, and I even get to talk to some of the movers and shakers in the world of geekdom. Occasionally, I even throw in a rant or two. So drop on by to geektechlive.com. See you there.
Do you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the geek generation while shopping on Amazon.com? Great. Because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You've spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine.
Hello, world. This is Todd from Dangerous Memories, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
All right, we are back, and it is time for news. Top story this week is something we mentioned briefly earlier and regards Michael Rosenbaum and his return to Smallville. But before I read the article about the... I know, calm down, Brian. I know you're excited, man. I'm containing myself, too. But before we get into the article actually talking about his return, there was rumors like crazy... just 24 hours prior. So please enlighten us, Brian.
All right. So to pick you back to, what was it? What night did this break? Okay, Thursday night was the night when they there was an article by, I've got the article, from on Entertainment Weekly that came up on Everywhere, and it spread like wildfire. And it was a Smallville quote-unquote scoop saying that Michael Rosenbaum turned down the finale appearance as Lex Luthor exclusive. And I mean... The I don't know if anyone follows the site, but Krypton site is the pretty much go-to place for Smallville news, and they posted it, and everyone pretty much went ape shit and were just like, you gotta be kidding me. And so I will read you the article, because as I read it, I was getting so angry that I, by the end, got to the end of the article, I actually wanted to spam Michael Rosenbaum's Twitter and just be like, you're a jerk, you're like letting all your fans down, et cetera, et cetera.
And before you read real quick, can I point out the fact that the Geek Generation did not post the fact that he would not be a part of it, because frankly, I did not believe it.
See, you and Scott both said that he believed that it was a smokescreen, like a that he thinks it was sort of like, to use a wrestling term, a swerve. He thought it was that they did it, they put it out on purpose to get people riled up, and then when the next day, but I don't know, I think. I'm kind of wondering if it was true, and then they just threw a lot of money at him. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because he did say a couple weeks ago on his Twitter, like, oh, no one from Smallville has contacted me or whatever. So I don't know. It's weird the way they played it. It's a very interesting, weird dynamic of how this all went down.
I don't know if it was an intentional swerve, and I have a particular reason based on the articles I read that I didn't believe it, but I'll let you take it from here.
So this was the article that was posted on entertainmentweekly.com or EW.com. So it says, Smallville scoop, Michael Rosenbaum turned down finale appearance as Lex Luthor exclusive. This was posted 9:30 at night on February 10th. Lex Luthor's latest scheme is perhaps his most villainous yet, refusing to appear in the Smallville series finale. Entertainment Weekly has learned that actor Michael Rosenbaum has repeatedly rebuffed attempts by producers this season to get him back on the CW show to reprise his role as Luthor in the finale. He has put the show behind him and moved on, says a knowledgeable source, in quotes. He is pursuing his other creative outlet, writing. By all indications, he is not going to be involved. The door still remains open for Rosenbaum to come on board, but it is closing fast. Smallville wraps series production late next month with only 3 episodes, including the 2-hour finale, left to shoot. Apart from seeing the Man of Steel finally putting on the spandex suit and fly like he means it, a reappearance by Rosenbaum is the top request by fans looking for creative closure in Smallville's final season. Rosemond played Superman's archrival for 7 seasons on the show, and Smallville ends his epic 10-year run in May. Producers have publicly taken a "you'll have to tune in to find out" stance when asked when Rosemond will show up, all the while naturally hoping the actor will change his mind. And then finally it says the CW has no comment regarding this article.
Yeah, I'm glad you read that one. That's the same article I read, and it does point out the piece that stuck out to me as the fact that this is not true. I was not aware that Rosenbaum's other passion was writing, and that's why he left Smallville. But when it said that in the article, I just thought to myself, as a writer and someone passionate about writing, how could he not return to wrap up a story as a writer?
Yeah.
Like, how could he not feel justified in doing that, or like he needs to do that?
Yeah.
So to me, just knowing that he's a writer, he's going to care about tying up things the right way.
I don't know. To me, it was just, I was just so angry because there had been so many things the weeks before. Yeah, it doesn't look good, doesn't look good. And then when this was like, he turned down the appearance and it made it seem like, you know, and so I don't know why, but like everyone was just flipping out and, you know, people were flaming him and like calling him like, and I think even, I'll tell, Scott told me this, but I don't know if you wanted it aired, but too bad. He, I guess him and Todd were like going back and forth, going like, oh, he's a, instead of Rosenbaum, he should be called Rosenbum. Like they're all just like trashing him and
all
like
heated.
So then, yeah, then 24 hours later I go online and I'm like, it broke at like 11 o'clock at night, right after that. It was the weirdest timing, and all of a sudden the CW sends out a tweet saying Michael Rosenbaum has signed a deal to be in the 2-hour finale, and I'm just like, I almost thought it was a joke when I first saw it. I'm like, this can't be real. And so then I'll let you get to the other article.
Yeah, and it didn't help the believability. Like, I think that article you read was a lot more believable because for the last few years, there have been so many rumors about the fact that Rosenbaum was upset with them having other forms of Lex on the show. And I can't imagine he would be because he chose to leave.
Yeah, but I did hear those that was pretty true, that he was pretty upset that they used, you know, the body doubles and stuff. But I don't know. Who knows if it's true or not?
Well, despite many online rumors claiming the contrary, Michael Rosenbaum will be returning to reprise the role of Lex Luthor for the 2-hour Smallville series finale. According to Deadline, Rosenbaum closed a deal on Friday to appear in the series finale, which will air on the CW on May 13th. Quote, "I'm simply doing it for all of the fans out there who made Smallville the great success it is," Rosenbaum said. "I appreciate all of their passion, their relentlessness, and even their threats. Ha ha. I can't wait to hug the old crew back in Vancouver one last time and see all of my old friends once again. Oh, and for Lex to become the badass he's destined to be."
There's no words to express how excited I am.
Yeah, great quote, knowing he's excited about it and coming back. And that's just awesome. I mean, Smallville this week, last week it was kind of a hiccup. This week, so much better. And now knowing that Rosenbaum is in the near future, just, I'm so friggin' pumped up again.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I was so deflated when I was like, I can't picture watching a finale with no, I mean, I'm sure they would have had either a body double or some sort of, they had to have some sort of thing of Luthor, but it wouldn't have been the same, you know, and now to know he's going to be in the entire 2-hour finale, and I just can't wait. It just, like, he's always been my favorite part of the show, even though the show has gotten better since he left.
Right.
I just think he is the greatest Lex Luthor, and he made that character, and I just can't, he's the villain of the story, and I just can't wait to see the ending of, I mean, it's just, I can't wait.
Granted, I don't know how I feel about the whole clone angle and the mirror universe and all that, but if they could find a way to say that Lex was never actually killed, epic.
That would make me feel, but yeah, why not just say, you know, after the fortress collapsed, he went into seclusion and all the rest of the people we've seen since then were clones.
Right.
Ego.
I know, because, I mean, Lex is, he's like an evil Batman. He's an ultimate strategist. Yeah, he would pull something like that.
Always had always has a backup plan. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God,
so
we could talk about this for hours, but
no, <I'm just> excited.
We could.
But yes, I'm excited, and that's the story.
Well, then moving on, 20th Century Fox has released the official trailer for X-Men First Class. What do you think?
I'm mixed. Much better than the pictures I saw.
Much better.
But I'm still a little leery. It looks a little, I don't want to say, it looks a little cheesy, like almost like a made-for-TV movie kind of, like, it doesn't, I don't know if it has the same, like, it looks like, well, we didn't want to pay all the big actors from the old X-Men movies, so we're going to bring in a bunch of random unknown people and still try to make an X-Men movie. I don't know, it's just, and the choices of some of the characters are just so out there and don't even follow anything from the comics. But I'll have to wait and see. Some of the stuff in the trailer I thought was well done. I liked the showing of the wheelchair, and then, you know, before he's Professor X, he was Charles, and the same with Magneto. I like that stuff, but other than that, I don't know, the Mystique and Beast, and I don't know. I'm excited to see Emma Frost, but other than that, I don't know. We'll see. I hope it's good. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's probably going to be better than the third movie, which was fucking terrible.
Probably better? I don't think it can be worse.
Yeah. Seriously, that movie was like horrible, that abomination. And what's Brett Ratner doing now? Oh wait,
all right.
Sorry,
I'm digging the trailer, but yes. I'm in the same boat as you. It's missing something.
Yeah,
and I don't know exactly what it is. I think it feels too much like the other X-Men movies, and I know I'm pretty sure this is supposed to be a reboot because it can't be a prequel. The way that they're
really no. I heard it was a I'm almost positive it was supposed to be a prequel, isn't it?
I don't think it can be. Not when you have Emma Frost in there and you have Beast in there the way that they do, and yet you think about the way that Beast was used in the third movie and then Frost in the Wolverine movie. Like,
well, no, the Wolverine movie, Frost was used. She was like a teenager.
Yeah.
So that could still work. And Beast, they even said in the third X-Men movie that he had been on the team before and had left. So I don't see a reason why it can't be a prequel, but you could be right. They could be going for a complete reboot, but I don't know. It seems very, I mean, Bryan Singer's attached to it and he's executive producing and he seems to be pretty, could have sworn he said he pretty much is designing it to be a prequel, but the only problem is I think the just having an X-Men movie without Wolverine, I think people are going to be expecting Wolverine even though he's not shown, and I think the box office is going to be pretty brutal without having, not to say that Wolverine is, but I mean he's been in every single X-Men movie so far, and I think they're taking not to say he should be in this because it wouldn't make continuity sense, but they're just taking a gamble, I think, without, you know.
I think
we'll see.
I think this is an interesting movie and a good and it's fine for comic book fans, but like you said, yeah, the mainstream, I don't know if
mainstream people are going to have no idea what to do with it. And, I mean, they're taking a big risk, I think, and it's going to be interesting. And, I mean, the whole reason they did this is because they wanted to make another X-Men movie, but they didn't want to pay the big contracts for all the stars that were in it. So they're like, oh, we'll just reboot it with lesser. Same thing with Spider-Man that they're doing now. So, I don't know.
Yeah, this is kind of in Green Lantern territory. I don't really know what to think about it yet. It's kind of
exactly.
A wait and see.
And you notice, you know, it's not Marvel's not even really promoting it because it's under Fox and they're kind of like waiting for the rights to revert back to Marvel's. So they're kind of just like, okay, we're gonna put this in the middle. It's, you know, they're worried about Thor and Captain America. I don't even think so. Yeah. Although, I mean, the X-Men movies have proven to be huge box office hits. So I could be completely wrong, and it could be fucking huge. Yeah. So I don't know.
I know it's a gamble. We'll wait and see on that
we'll
one.
See.
Absolutely. Let's see. Spider-Man joining the Fantastic Four. However, they are now known as the Future Foundation. With the recent death of the Human Torch, and this is not a spoiler because if you're a comic book fan, you already know about this. If you're not, well, then the story's not for you anyway.
They spoiled it. The stupid media spoiled it. The AP press spoiled it 2 days before it actually happened.
True.
So everyone spoiled
it
anyways.
With the recent death of the Human Torch, the Fantastic Four is no more. The surviving members, Mr. Fantastic, Invisible Woman, and The Thing, will join with Spider-Man and some top secret members to form an unstoppable force, the Future Foundation. The creative team of Jonathan Hickman and Steve Epting present the oversized FF number 1 due out March 23rd. Quote, FF will alter the very fabric of the Marvel Universe, explained Tom Brevoort, Senior Vice President of Publishing. Jonathan and Steve have crafted a unique, powerful new series that's going to surprise a lot of fans with its combination of mind-blowing ideas and visuals. Now, I'm sure you have a lot stronger reaction to this than I do, as you are following all this stuff.
Yeah, so basically what they're doing is, over the past couple of years, as you could even see in the movies, the Fantastic Four has always been a very hard sell for comic fans. It's hovered in the mid-level towards the lowering. It's very, you know, it's a book about family and, you know, the four. It never really caught on. In the 60s it was the biggest thing. It's still a huge comic, but it's just never really, it's been declining slowly in popularity, and they never really, no matter what creative team they put on it, it never really, you know, got really popular. So this is their way of trying to make a big splash, although I don't think, I mean, you know, they killed off Captain America, that it was everywhere. I mean, Human Torch, I don't think it didn't get the reaction they were looking for, but it did get covered a little bit. The comic that where he got killed was like, I think sold a huge amount of copies, but again, that's all people thinking, oh, this is going to be worth something someday. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is to see if this will bring in new readers and if they're interested in the new direction. I think it's a fantastic idea of a new direction.
No pun intended,
I like the new
of course.
Yeah. I like the new designs of the costumes with the and I like Spider-Man being thrown in there with the reverse white and black. I think it's an interesting idea. Who knows if it's going to work? It may have, obviously, it's going to have a short shelf life because you know they're going to bring back Johnny Storm in, like, I'd say 2 to 3 years max. So, you know how they always do. But I think for now, it's an interesting experiment. We'll see how it goes, but I dig it. I like the idea.
It's a cool idea. I have two major issues with, well, not major, but little issues with it, I guess.
Yeah.
The thing looks like a big baby because he's basically wearing Oshkosh overalls. Not digging that. And do they have to use Spider-Man for everything?
I don't think so, but I think the way in past, even since the, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man number one in 1963, I'm going geeky and fanboy now, but the very first issue, Fantastic Four, and he tried to join the Fantastic Four in his very first issue, so there have always been a direct link between them, and Johnny Storm is his best friend. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense, but yeah, I know what you mean, throwing Spider-Man in there, but I think it thematically it makes a little more sense than, you know, putting someone else in that spot, but yeah, I don't know.
Do you think this is going to have a big impact on the Spider-Man books?
I'm sure they'll be slightly, you know, they'll mention it and, you know, have a slight crossover type thing where they're referencing it, but I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on it.
Do you think he's wearing the Future Foundation gimmicks across all his books now, like the gear?
Absolutely not. No. Right. They won't do that. They won't do that.
Interesting. Let's see. This next one is a sad one for a lot of people. The Guitar Hero franchise is no more.
Oh.
Activision.
I still can't believe this.
I know. This came out of nowhere. Activision Blizzard announced on Wednesday that the Guitar Hero franchise has come to an end. According to the company's financial statement, quote, due to continued declines in the music genre, the company will disband Activision Publishing's Guitar Hero business unit and discontinue development on its Guitar Hero game for 2011. Activision Publishing CEO Eric Hirshberg added, quote, given the considerable licensing and manufacturing costs associated with this genre, we simply cannot make these games profitably based on current economics and demand. So basically what he's saying is it costs too much money to get the songs in the game, and the games aren't providing the profit to continue doing that, which is crappy, really, because I always dug the Guitar Hero games. And
no, I mean, I remember having the first Guitar Hero on my PS2, and I mean, I think the problem is, though, is that this always had this sort of thing always had a shelf life. Because, I mean, I remember when I first played it, not too many people, it wasn't, you know, the big thing. It was like, oh, this is cool. You can play guitar and just got some songs. And then all of a sudden, like, and a year later, it caught on and everyone and their brother wanted Guitar Hero. Then they had Rock Band and they had, you know, all the expansions. And I think it just got too big, expanded too big, too fast, and it was eventually just going to implode from inside.
Meanwhile, Band's launching like the Rock Band Network 2.0 and with a ridiculous amount of downloadable songs. I always preferred the gameplay in Guitar Hero, but Rock Band was always smarter about creating the product and having the songs available and supporting the players and all that. But so I'm bummed to see Guitar Hero go, but the music genre is not dead yet in video games.
No, but I just think it just took a lot of people by surprise. It was just kind of random, like just out of nowhere. But, you know, I expected it, but I didn't expect it like this. I didn't expect it to be like, you know, just out of the blue or you know. And I don't think it's in the article you posted, or it might be, but one of them, I thought it was very pretentious the way that one of the guys from Activision was like, we're going to be concentrating on our more profitable games, Call of Duty. And I was just like, seriously, dude, that was such a, like, way, like a cheap shot at like the people who like Guitar Hero.
Yeah, it was kind of a big slap in the face. And like you said, it was kind of out of nowhere. I think they could have probably said, okay, we're going to finish up the 2011. It's already in production. Like, we've already started developing it. Let's make this our last huge goodbye to the Guitar Hero franchise. And
or even just go on hiatus for a little bit and say, you know, we're going to take a break and we're going to see how things go in the future. Yeah. They're just sort of like, well, it's completely dead. We're destroying, like, I'm like, all right.
And on a side note, but as far as the things that Activision announced, even though they haven't said that the franchise is dead, there will be no new Tony Hawk game in 2011 either.
Really? I didn't read that. That's interesting.
And they've had major faults with the last few, though.
Oh, yeah. I heard terrible things about the last... I forget. I think the one... Was it the one last or the year before? The one that actually came with the interactive skateboard?
Yeah, Tony Hawk Ride got the worst reviews.
I think on G4, they said it was the worst video game ever made or something. It was like, bad. Yeah. Like, they're like, you might as well just throw this skateboard through your window. It'd be more entertaining.
Which is
like,
so sad when you think about, like... The first four Tony Hawk games were all amazing.
Yeah, in college, I remember playing those. They were cool. And they were so fun. And yeah, it's just funny how the shelf life of these franchises are just like, I don't know.
Stopped doing what worked. They tried introducing all these new mechanics that didn't go anywhere for anybody.
It became
too complicated to play. And I couldn't play as Wolverine or Iron Man anymore. So I was like, I don't know what they're thinking.
Forget it.
Darth Maul. Darth Maul was awesome.
I completely forgot about that.
The unlockable characters was huge. And then there was no reward for playing anymore.
No.
Oh, well. Goodbye, Guitar Hero. We will miss you. By the way, as far as DLC goes for Guitar Hero, they do have DLC up through February at least. I don't know how much further it's going to go beyond that.
Yeah, probably.
They are planning on releasing DLC that they've already like worked out. But beyond that, it'll just kind of be there. It'll still be available for purchase, but it's just going to kind of stop, I guess.
Yeah.
Bummer.
That sucks. Yeah. Although on the plus side, I'm sure you're going to see a lot of clearing out the old stock. So if you don't have any of the Guitar Heroes, it's probably a good chance to grab them for the last time.
Yeah, get your old peripherals.
Price. Yeah.
This next story, while it started off as just rumor last week, Cobie Smulders is now confirmed for the part of S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Maria Hill in The Avengers. Smulders is best known for starring on the sitcom How I Met Your Mother and was loosely referenced in connection to an unproduced Wonder Woman film when Avengers director Joss Whedon was attached. So we kind of knew this was coming, but now it's official.
Because Joss has always liked her, and like they said, like you just said, when he wanted to do Wonder Woman, which I still don't understand why DC threw that script away and now they have no Wonder Woman movie, but that's okay. They paid him for it, but he wanted her to be Wonder Woman, and so he's always had a soft spot for her, and I think it's not a major role. I mean, Maria Hill actually was just introduced in the comics. I'm surprised she's even in the movie. She just was introduced in comics, I think, in 2003 or 4 by Bendis. She was created by Bendis, and she's a pretty major S.H.I.E.L.D. character, but she's not like a Avenger. When I first posted on my Facebook, people were like, I can't see her being a superhero. I'm like, she's not a superhero. She's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Right.
Of course, no one knew. So everyone was like, I can't see her being a superhero. But I like the idea of her being Maria Hill. She has to be kind of sassy. She has to be kind of also kind of bitchy at the same time. So I think she can pull it off.
And speaking of Cobie Smulders and Lois Lane, how about that?
There you go. I didn't think of that, but I'm sure Marvel would be like, we don't want you going to do a Superman movie.
She wouldn't be the first Ryan Reynolds.
that Deadpool movie's dead in the water anyways. So, but no, I like it. It's good. I like the casting.
Cool. Let's see. Infamous 2 news. Woo. PlayStation has revealed how the morality system will work in Infamous 2. Similar to Infamous, karma will be based on events in which you can choose to lead Cole toward good or evil. Unlike the original game, these choices will be the result of following one character over another. Karma moments from Infamous are now represented by character-driven dialogue and 3D mocap cutscenes. Your conscience comes into play with the introduction of Kuo and Nyx, two NPC characters. Kuo is an NSA agent working to help Cole defeat the Beast. Nyx is a New Marias native that grew up in the swamps around New Marias, whose hatred for Bertrand stems from witnessing him kill her family. She is your hedonistic guide that coaxes Cole into not thinking about the consequences of his actions. Did you play Infamous?
Oh, yeah.
Loved it. Pumped for two.
Yes. I always hear the arguments between Prototype and Infamous because for some reason people like to compare and contrast those two games.
Well, they were both fairly open world. They involved superpowers, and they came out around the same time, so...
Yeah, but I always liked I thought Infamous was much, much better. But of course, people were like, "Oh, it's PS3 exclusive back then." And I don't know if this one. Is this one going to be PS3 exclusive?
Absolutely.
Still, or is, okay. So yeah, that was like the big oh. But I liked Infamous a lot better, and I'm so stoked for this game. I can't wait.
I like the morality system and everything. I don't know how I feel about them making it this straightforward. Granted, there was not a lot of gray area in the first one. It was good or bad,
no.
And this is the same way. But to choose one character over another feels way too repetitive.
Where you're just like, okay, I'm going to go. No, I'm going to go. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's kind of.
And why is one still sticking around this whole time? After a while of saying no to one, are you going to.
I still know.
I'm still over here. I don't know. But. We'll see how it plays out. I'm sure they'll do a good job with it. The story was great in the first one, so
yeah, that's what I'm more looking forward to is the story and the gameplay. I mean, the morality is good, but we'll see.
Yeah. And of course, our Marvel vs. Capcom 3 story for the week. Marvel vs. Capcom 3 will be getting more DLC than just characters, it seems, as Capcom has announced a shadow mode for the upcoming fighter. Beginning in March, players will be able to face off against custom-built computer opponents, modeled after famous players and specific themed teams via Marvel vs. Capcom 3's innovative Shadow Mode. A series of downloadable packs, each will contain three unique teams to battle against, with their own programmed special techniques and preferences. The first pack will include the team and AI personality of the game's producer, Ryota Nitsuma, in addition to the Shadow Mode teams for assistant producer, Akihito Kadawaki. And
wow, you're good.
I'm just going. I don't even know what I'm doing.
You're pretty good,
and,
actually.
And QA team leader. More packs will be coming soon and may feature some personalities you already know. This is a really cool idea. I don't know if there's a price point or if it's free or what, but that's just interesting. I mean, it's a way of the developers getting in touch directly with their fans in a creative, interesting way.
Yeah, I like it. I just don't know if I'd want to pay for it. Like, if it is...
Oh, I'm not paying for this. Are you kidding me?
That's what I was gonna say. Like, if it's free, that sounds awesome. But you know, if they're gonna try to charge you for it, I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna pass. It's a cool idea, though.
Yeah, totally.
It's very, very cool. So,
Well, that's the end of the news block. So, our poll question this week: which Super Bowl spot got you the most pumped for the movie? We talked about Captain America, Super 8, Thor, and Cowboys and Aliens. Were there other movie spots? Those are the ones we focused on.
I don't think there was very many others. I don't remember any if there were. Most of them were just, you know, Doritos and all those other funny commercials that they try to be funny.
True.
Which aren't really
Speaking
funny.
Speaking of which, the Darth Vader Volkswagen commercial. Loved
yes.
it.
Yes. Loved it. That wins best.
That's the highlight. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So which Super Bowl spot got you the most pumped for the movie? Send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. Do you have a final thought or something you would like to plug, Brian?
As I say every time I'm on here, which still hasn't materialized, I will be having my own comic book podcast on here soon. I'm trying to set up a guest host that's kind of turned into more of a hassle than I expected.
Welcome to my world.
I was going to say. So I'm still trying to work out the logistics, but hopefully by the end of the month we will have the first episode out.
Awesome. So. Sounds great. Can't wait for it.
So other than that, nope, I am good.
Alrighty, well then, audience, if you like the show, please tell your friends, share this on Facebook, share it on Twitter. I would love for people to go to the Facebook page and use that suggest to friends button. The last time I had even just 3 or 4 people do that, we went up in numbers exponentially on the Facebook page. So please use that suggest to friends button and send it to anyone you think would be interested in any of our content. If you want to visit the site, and especially the show notes for this, since we talked about so many videos to check out, go to www.thegeekgeneration.com and check out all that content. There is a button on that site to subscribe in iTunes, where you can hopefully rate the show and write a review while you're on there. That would be great. There's a donation button that no one will ever use, except for G1. There's the if you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you would like us to discuss on a future show, please send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. If you'd like to submit an article to the site or an audio file to this show, please send those to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And lastly, as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site is on our site. Episode 27 wrapping up, Ryan. Thanks for joining me. Always a good time.
No problem.
Michael Rosenbaum.
Michael Rosenbaum. We will see you all next time. Later.
Well, isn't that special?